hello and welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. My name's Eric Mabbitt, and I am the pastor of Bailey Presbyterian Church and your host. And I'm excited today to bring you the conversation that I had with Gavin Breeden. Gavin is the minister over at Reform University Fellowship at Tennessee Tech University in Cookeville, Tennessee. It was such a pleasure to get back together with my good friend, Gavin. He actually ministered here in Meridian at the same church that Mason is ministering at now. And so he's been with RUF for almost 5 years, and our church supports him as a missionary. I know Mason's church, North Point, also supports him as a missionary. And so it's good to hear from him. And he shares in this episode what his ministry and family life look like right now. And we also have a really interesting discussion about creativity and how creativity is a Christian endeavor. And so we had to divide this conversation into two parts. We talked about an hour, so that's part one today. Come back tomorrow for part two, where we will discuss books, movie recommendations, board game recommendations, and then have a really good discussion at the end about how do we keep these momentary comforts that God gives to us, how do we keep them from becoming idols in our life? And then we also close with Gavin sharing the texts and theological truths that he is turning to strengthen his own hope during this time. I hope that you enjoy this conversation as much as I did having it. And without further ado, we'll jump right in now. Thanks for listening. All right, and well, welcome to the Rookie Pastor Podcast. I have with me my good friend and former colleague. Is that what we call it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So fellow pastor, Gavin Breeden. So welcome.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we want to invite you on to talk because you are an RUF minister at Tennessee Tech University. You're my friend.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to hear about kind of first, what does campus ministry look like right now under the coronavirus and all the restrictions that you guys are going through? Update. So what's it looking like? What are you doing with your students? And let's start there.
Yeah, the thing about right now is like, there's really no playbook, you know, for this, for any of us. And so we're all kind of learning as we go. But currently at Tennessee Tech, school is completely online for students. And so everything they're doing is either through Zoom or recorded lectures. And so there's no on-campus activities whatsoever. And so as a result, RUF, we're not doing any on-campus in-person activities, as well. And so right now we're doing a lot of stuff online, which a few months ago, if you'd asked me if an internet pastor was a thing, I would have said probably not, you know, but now I find myself functioning like an internet pastor, I guess. So yeah.
An influencer.
I'm an influencer now. Yeah. We do a lot of, so we use Zoom a lot. We kind of have continued our large group Bible study and our small group Bible studies, which are sort of the bread and butter of our weekly activities.
Yeah. And actually, I'm sorry, let's pause right there. Cause I'm an awesome interviewer and I didn't really let you introduce yourself.
So. Oh yeah, sure.
We already said you're at Tennessee Tech University, but like, what is RUF for those who don't know? And how long have you been doing it? And you've been talking about like large group, small group. So and then I guess if you could just explain in brief what the ministry model is resume back to the coronavirus alternate plan.
Sure, so. Totally. Yeah. So I'm Gavin Breeden, as mentioned. I've been at Tennessee Tech now doing RUF for 4.5 years, almost 5 years.
Is it really that long?
It's for real that long. This is the end of my fifth year. Yeah. As of in July, I'll have been in Cookeville for 5 years. So before this, I was in Meridian at the sister church of Eric's church, at Mason's church. And I was assistant pastor there for 4 years. And so, yeah, we've loved it up here, but yeah, the time has flown for sure. And so RUF stands for Reform University Fellowship. And that is the campus ministry of the PCA, which is our denomination. And it's on about 150 campuses across the country, largely in the Southeast, but spreading quickly across other parts of the nation and even around the globe, really. And so, you know, RUF looks a little bit different at each campus. It's, you know, every campus is sort of a unique, distinct place. And so we try to, the first thing a campus minister does when he goes to a new school is try to just get to know that place. And, but there are some commonalities. You know, we do every week, every Wednesday night, we do a large group Bible study. So it's sort of like a, you know, mini worship service almost. We meet on campus in the nursing building at Tennessee Tech. We have a student band that leads us in singing hymns and songs. We have some prayer. We have a time of welcoming and fellowship. It's also a time where I stand up and teach from the Bible for about 25, 30 minutes. And so this, you know, each semester I do a different series, much like a sermon series that a pastor would do in a church, you know, through a certain book or through a topic. This particular semester, I've been doing the Fruit of the Spirit, which has been really sweet and wonderful. I've really enjoyed it a lot. But we also do small group Bible studies. Some of those meet on campus. Most of them meet on campus. Some of them might meet in apartments of students off campus and things like that. Some of the small groups are led by myself or by, we have a woman who works with us, an intern named Anna, and she leads some small groups. We also have some students who lead small groups and that sort of thing. And so, yeah, what is RUF? We're really, you know, our goal is to sort of be the arm of the church reaching to the campus. We are not a replacement for the church. We tell our students that all the time. We're not a church. We are designed to sort of be like evangelists, to go to the church, to sort of collect students, scoop them up, and help point them towards the local church.
And I think that's one of the, I know the couple of features of RUF or what I make it distinctive is that, first of all, you have an actual ordained, trained, you know, full minister there who's like just like you would find in a church. But then what I love about it is that RUF doesn't pretend to be the church, because that's sometimes the danger of the college parachurch ministry is that people go, I mean, I remember being in college and being involved with the campus ministry program, but it's not RUF. And it was a great program in many ways. You and I had long conversations about that.
Sure, yeah.
But even some of the students, through no fault of the program even necessarily, but some of the students were just like, oh, well, I'm a part of this. This is my church. Mm-hmm. And I remember being there going like, no, this is not your church. Like, yeah. You know, like, no, your church is the thing that's called church. Like, mm-hmm. like that has other believers that are not in their early 20s. Like, please, for all that is, you know, the love of all that is holy, don't make, you know, 20-year-olds your church. So, and then the second thing I think was what you were hitting at was just that organic connection to the church and how you connect them to the church and just, and so I those are probably just the two distinctive features that ever since I heard of RUF, which I hadn't heard of since it was when I first started at RTS in Orlando, when I first came across and, you know, I was like, what's an RUF? And they explained, I was like, that is the best model that I've heard of. So anyway, that's always one of the things I've loved about the RUF. So what is ministry looking like right now, with you guys?
Yeah. So we've continued most of what we were doing. So the three primary things we do the large group Bible study every Wednesday night. We do small groups that meet with, you know, various times throughout the week. And then we do one-on-one ministry with students, just sitting down with a student in the university center, sitting down for a cup of coffee, just talking about what's going on in your life, you know, what's God doing in your life right now, sort of just listening to whatever kind of problems and stressors and things, just, you know, pastoring students, walking through their college lives with them. And, you know, college is such a hugely transitional time of life. And so there's always a lot of interesting things going on in their lives. And so, yeah, so most of that stuff has continued. We're just doing, it just looks a little bit differently now. It feels a little bit different. So we still do our large group Bible study on Wednesday nights. We do it over Zoom. And that's been something that's taken some, you know, getting used to. We still sing a little bit. We just have one person, our music leader, sings. Everyone else is muted, thankfully, because the delay would be really wonky. And we sing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so she's got a great voice, so she leads us well. So we still sing a couple songs. Everyone else kind of just sings quietly at their own computer, muted. We have a couple students share testimonies. I'm encouraging students just to say, how are you doing right now? What's going on in your life right now? How are you feeling in the midst of this these strange times, and what's a scripture, what's a passage of the Bible that's been particularly encouraging to you, you know, the last week or two. That's been really sweet. And then I've continued teaching on the fruit of the Spirit. And so, you know, teaching over Zoom is weird because there's really a lot less feedback than you normally get from people. I'm teaching a little shorter too, just because attention spans, I think, are more difficult when you're sitting at a computer rather than in a room with someone.
Now, do you think the part of it is, and I heard somebody talking about this, that because Zoom is video communication is different than it's just a different form of communication. And so you are having to learn, like, everyone feels awkward because, and that's kind of what tires you out, because you're not picking up on the social cues. They're harder to pick up. There's lag and you feel very self-conscious and you're always like, you know, turn off self-view so you can't see yourself, because you just, but then you're terrified of, like, what if something happens that I can't see and people are seeing?
Totally. You know, it is awkward. And I, the more I do it, the more used to it I get. But the first week was, oh man, it was terrible. Like, teaching and just dead silence, just nothing but dead silence. And, you know, you can't, are people with me? Are they listening? Or, you know, it was just weird. But actually the students, actually after the first week, they're like, hey, could you talk a little bit longer? Actually, we want a little bit more. And so, this week I'm actually finishing up the Fruit of the Spirit. We're doing self-control. And so it's kind of shifted also the way that this whole situation has shifted the way that I'm applying these things. Obviously, like, you know, now thinking about, okay, what does it look like to be gentle? What does gentleness look like when you're under quarantine? You know, maybe stuck with a roommate or stuck with your family, or, you know, stuck under a roof, stuck inside all day with people. You know, how does gentleness and self-control and patience and love, how do those fruit now have an opportunity to, you know, be shown to the people in our lives?
One thing I was preaching on, I'm preaching through Ecclesiastes in the, I moved the evening service. We moved the session. Originally we're going to move to Wednesday. And so I just been releasing the Sunday night sermons on Wednesday night. And so we're preaching through Ecclesiastes. And so, my last one was on the need for community. And yeah. it was kind of funny as I was thinking through the application on it, like, how do you preach on the need for, like, he's just hammering how we need community. You need it, you need it, need it, but you can't have it. So how do you do that? And so it was just interesting trying to think through the applications on that, you know, in this very, you know, specific crisis. It just reminds me of reading about how Martin Lloyd-Jones was, you know, preaching in the midst of World War II. You know, like, he's preaching in, like, a church that had been bombed. And, you know, it just how, like, when Derek Thomas, I remember him talking about preaching right after some kind of, there was an IRA attack in Belfast. And he was like that Sunday. And so he's, you know, it may have been his pastoral prayer, but he's thinking, how do I address this crisis with my people? So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's such a strange time that we're all going through sort of the same thing in different ways. And yeah, there's a lot of, you know, the Bible makes such a big point of, like, how much we need one another, how much we need each other. And we're all feeling that very acutely right now. And so that aspect of it is easy, right? Like, yeah, you feel the need for the community right now that you don't have it, but what does community look like during coronavirus? And
yeah,
that's where I think we're having to rely on, you know, a lot of these mediated forms of communication, like Zoom and phone calls and stuff like that. You know, I've heard of some people even taking up letter writing again, which I think is really, really cool. But I wonder about the chances of, you know, spreading coronavirus through the letters or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just forced us to, I think differently about how we love and minister to people and how the church is the church in this time.
I'm just imagining people, like, using, like, cutting up, like, letters out of magazines and then, like, with gloves on and, like, gluing them together, like, ransom notes. That's and right. Like, sending them. And then it's like, I went to the store yesterday and actually did the, you saw the Surgeon General showed how to make a homemade face mask. And so I used a bandana and did that, you know, walking around with this bandana. I'm like, you know, I'm here for a legitimate transaction. I'm not robbing anyone.
It's the Wild West again. That's
I'm going to drop off my, my crazy letters and no, just, it's, yeah. It is a crazy time. So what is family life look like for you guys right now? Because you have, okay, so, I mean, tell us who you're married to, kiddos, all that.
Absolutely. I'm married to Shalane. We've been married, this June will be 14 years of marriage for us, which is, that's also gone really quickly. And we have three kids. We have a 9-year-old daughter named Addie Pearl. We have a 6-year-old son named Miles and a 4-year-old daughter named Stella. And so family life looks very differently right now too, because our, you know, our kids, we have a great little elementary school just around the corner from our house. And so our kids go to school there. Our 4-year-old does not. She stays home. She goes to daycare twice a week, but now our kids are home 24/7. And, you know, there's certainly been a couple challenges with that. Just that, like, the fight, especially on a rainy day, rainy days are long days, where there can be some bickering and things like that. But overall, it's been a really sweet thing for our family. Like, we've really enjoyed just spending time together as a family. I mean, we eat every meal together during the day, which has been really nice. You know, and so we've kind of gotten into a rhythm of, like, you know, in the morning doing some, like, their teachers have provided school stuff for them to do. So in the morning they do some school stuff, you know, they go out and play if the weather's nice, they'll go out and play for several hours in the middle of the day. You know, in the evening we try to, we'll play like a board game, you know, or try to do something fun together, watch a movie together. We've been trying to do something fun each night as a family. So that's been really cool.
Now, you said you, like, right before we got on the call, you said that you went for a run, so you're still able to get out and get some exercise in.
That's right. So, I mean, we live in sort of a rural area. You know, our town's a little smaller than Meridian, so but similar in a lot of ways. And so, yeah, we are able to – I'm able to go out and just run in my neighborhood and not encounter anybody. And so that's been nice, too. And we have a decent backyard, and so our kids are able to, you know, safely run around and play and do kind of stuff outside, which really is helpful for all of us, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have in my backyard, we have a swing set tower thing. Like, it's got three swings on it. It's got a sandbox in the bottom. It's kind of crummy now, cause
I think I remember when you built that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got that thing going on. And then we also, when my neighbors moved across the street, they gave us their big old trampoline. So we've got that.
Nice.
And yet when we send our kids out, they go, we're bored. And I'm like, come on. Like, you know, and so just, but they can't go out front because within 30 seconds, there's 20 kids out in my cul-de-sac because the neighbors across the street have 6 kids.
Sure.
And then two other neighbors, they have 2 kids. And then another neighbor, they've got at least 1 kid. Like, so it's just like, you send people out, like, and then, so anyway, it's a, yeah, so, yeah, it's funny though, but, it's been good. So we're homeschoolers, but we still get, we still like breaks from each other.
So. sure. Yeah.
we like getting outside.
You know, when we first told our kids in mid-March, during spring break, we said, hey, you're not going back to school in, you know, the rest of March. And initially that was the announcement. And so they were like, yay, it's awesome. We get to stay home. And then in early April, they said, so, like, when are we going back to school? And we said, well, probably not going back to school in April. And, you know, our 2 oldest kids started crying. They were like, oh, like, they were not super thrilled with it. Our 4-year-old has now been asking, like, okay, so when are we going to, like, stop staying home? You know, she kind of realizes that things are not normal. We're not going to church. She's not going to daycare. You know, they're just not, our normal rhythms are all sort of gone.
That's a good question. So rhythms, cause I, like, the running joke now that I see a lot on, like, online is, let's play the game, what day of the week it is.
yeah.
Cause nobody knows. cause that rhythm's gone. Yeah, and so we're not going to work. We're not going to church. We're not going. So, and people just, like, you know, I drove, the other day I had to go to Walgreens to get something. Cause, Abby, our 9-year-old, fell off her bike and just knees, elbows, she got bruised on her hips, like, nothing broken, but that girl, like, she scraped or bruised, like, every other part of her body. And so, thankful she had a helmet on, she's okay, but and she's all healed up, but she's well on the mend. But I had to go to Walgreens to go get some nonstick gauze pads. and so I go there and I was like, oh, I miss driving.
Yeah.
You know, just but so what are you guys doing to try to establish those rhythms, those routines to keep the family sane.
Yeah. I mean, I think because the weekly rhythms are gone, like the daily rhythm now becomes even more important. And so we try to have a, you know, it's not super rigid, but we try to have a daily schedule, which I've already alluded to. That's pretty much the same every day, just so our kids kind of know what to expect. And we all kind of know what to expect. But, you know, some of the ways we're trying to like make good use of the time, you know, as I mentioned previously, you know, we eat every meal together, which is really nice. We've been reading as a family. We've been reading together the Andrew Peterson book, The Wingfeather Saga. Are you familiar with this series of books? Like Andrew Peterson's like a Christian music guy, and he's written some.
No, I'm not. But I want to be interested in this because we are always looking for books.
So. Yeah, well, okay. I got some recommendations. Yeah, so The Wingfeather Saga is like a fantasy. It's like a four volume fantasy series for sort of, you know, family aged, it's kind of like probably close to like Chronicles of Narnia, like that age group. But yeah, so we've been reading that at our meals together, and that's provided like a nice rhythm for us, like reading a chapter or so each meal. You know, we've tried to like pray together, like have like a regular prayer time and you know, trying to do the family worship stuff as you know, trying to develop, cultivate rhythms and stuff in that as well. And so that's been really helpful for us. You know, like I mentioned, we try to watch a movie at night or do something fun together at night. But I think having like a daily rhythm, you know, is really helpful. Like I thought the first week of us kind of being at home was really hard for me and my wife because we didn't really have any sort of schedule in place.
Yeah.
And it just felt like hours of, I don't know, just wasting and scrolling through, you know, social media, and it was not a pretty sight. Yeah. It felt bad. And so I feel like
you don't feel good after that.
No,
you know, you're just like, I feel like a bad person.
Yeah. Yeah.
After that.
It makes you feel icky. Yeah. And so I think just having a rhythm, having a daily sort of routine that everybody kind of knows what's coming up. And my wife will even sort of write on like we have this little dry erase board, and she'll kind of write, here's what we're doing today. And it just seems like it's really helped us kind of stay on task a little bit. And just even me, like trying to schedule, you know, having my small groups and stuff scheduled throughout the day and just kind of knowing what's coming and what to expect, I feel like adds a little bit of a rhythm to each day. So maybe, and hopefully each day, you know, each day does feel still pretty much the same, but I think having those rhythms makes it, you know, at least more bearable, more livable.
Well, So I want to like move over to now into a kind of more, I don't know. I can't think of a word, which is funny because we're talking about creativity. So when we're thinking about creativity, you're a very thoughtful guy. You're a cinephile, right?
That's right. That's right.
And that means you like movies, not that's sin. Right. Just to be clear.
Yeah. Yes, C-I-N, right?
Yes, yes, C-I-N. Yeah. So you love movies, you know, I've always thought of you as a very kind of creative, kind of thoughtful, kind of more artistic side in terms of, so I've always enjoyed those conversations with you. So, I mean, we're in the midst of a really hard time right now, and obviously we've got all the negative stuff that is very serious, but at the same time, there are some opportunities. And so, you and I talked very briefly about the opportunity that for creativity. And so I kind of want to just explore that a little bit. And, you know, in that, how is creativity a Christian endeavor? And how does that relate to Christian theology? But then also what are these opportunities for creativity? So just some thoughts on that. We can get discussing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I think it's interesting when the first thing we see God doing in the Bible is creating, you know, that he's the creator and creating all things and not just, you know, shabby things, but good things and beautiful things and things that he declares are very good and things that we still enjoy today, mountains and rivers and valleys and canyons and stars and planets and, you know, all these kind of things, animals and birds, which are so beautiful. I mean, they're so beautiful that, you know, poets continue to write about the beauty of creation, beauty of the world. And so it makes sense that, you know, as human beings, we're created in God's image, that there's a part of that in us as well. There's a sense in which God has made us to be creative. He's made us to create. I mean, he sends us out to be fruitful and to multiply, you know, to exercise dominion over the earth. And that means to have a lot of babies, but it also means, but it also means to fill the world with culture and with good things, things that are good and beautiful. And so, yeah, that's where I think we see, you know, the value of music and art and science and all these things where we are creating things and making things and better understanding the world, the beauty and the, you know, goodness of the world that we live in. And so right now I think it's a great time for creativity. I mean, I think about it in two ways, both like from a vocational standpoint, from a ministry standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint. I mean, vocationally, there's really, like I said earlier, there's no playbook for this right now. Like, there's no one who can sort of tell us like, okay, here's what it looks like to do ministry in quarantine over several months. Like, no, that's not an experience that many people have had currently living. And so yeah. I think there's that leaves a lot of opportunities for us to experiment, to try things. And so, you know, we are doing some fun hangout stuff with our students and just trying to be creative about how we can help them to, you know, virtually spend time together. So one thing we've done a game night over Zoom, which was pretty fun. We did this Quiplash, which is a computer game, which you can play using smartphones. You don't have to be together to play it.
That's cool.
Yeah. I recommend that. Quiplash is a lot of fun for a group of people. We're planning to do like a cooking night over Zoom. My intern had this idea to do like everyone, you know, get the same ingredients and set up your laptop in the kitchen and we're going to cook together, like have our little cooking time. We're all kind of making the same thing. And that seems like a weird idea, but we told our student leaders about it and they thought it was awesome. They were so excited.
That's great.
To try that. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to be creative ministry, to think about ways to connect with our people and to connect our people together. You know, I've even played some Fortnite with some of my guy students, which is something I hadn't done before. Fortnite is this massively popular video game that a lot of people play.
Yeah.
I've played with some of my guys, and that's been a lot of fun. And so, yeah, there's just chances for that. But I think also personally, like, it's a great time, you know, stuck at home, it's a great time to sort of flex some of those creative muscles. And I've been trying to draw more, which feels weird to be a 35-year-old man saying that I've been drawing, but it's been really fun. I've been drawing with my kids. I've been trying to write a little poetry. I've been trying to just create things and just, you know, to make things and to exercise. I feel like I have a little bit of, you know, margin and time and I'm stuck at home. And so trying to exercise some of those creative muscles.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting because two thoughts on that was first, you know, going back to the idea of creativity, you know, the very idea, this impulse to create in the image, because we were made in the image of our creator and who creates, and he creates from nothing. We create with what is created. Mm-hmm. But then also in the kind of the whole pursuit of classical education, mm-hmm. was the true, the good, and the beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so in fact, that would be very much like what you're doing is very much like what fits in with that. It would be like, yeah, you read and you run and you spend time with your family. You do a little drawing, write a little poetry. Like, that's good stuff because
right.
You're engaging with all those things because they're all interrelated together. And then and it's kind of funny because you saw on initially, you know, all these posts were going around about what all these people did during the plague. And like Shakespeare wrote King Lear. Yeah. You know, and I forgot what was it Newton who wrote a bunch of dissertations and stuff like that. And so
and calculus, I think.
Yeah, something like that. So it was just but it was funny because on the one sense it was kind of like, hey, use your creativity. To use this time to be creative, and it was kind of like be productive, but then people push back against the pressure of that, like unless you do Shakespeare or unless you do Newton, then you're a failure, you know. And so,
yeah.
I think from that we can take kind of what you're saying, which is, but let's just see the opportunity for what it is, and that it's not necessarily an opportunity to become famous or
totally.
To be. Do something amazing. It's an opportunity to write some poetry. It's an opportunity to explore some things you haven't had to explore or to work on things you haven't gotten a chance to work on before. And so there's those. And so, especially if you're not someone who's being directly affected by either, economic, you know, job loss or or the coronavirus itself, if you're just, like many millions of us just under, you know, lockdown, then yeah, this is an opportunity to get creative and to try new things and to establish new patterns or try new stuff and then, and see what sticks.
Yeah. That's a good word. I think, you know, creativity and productivity are not the same thing. I mean, I think, if you sit down with the pressure to try to come up with something like King Lear, yeah, it's going to feel daunting. That does bring with it a lot of pressure. But if you sit down with the intention of just creating something for the joy of creating, you know, just for the pleasure of it, just, yeah. I mean, I'm at home writing bad poetry, you know, that will hopefully never be read by anyone, but there's,
I thought you were going to read some for us.
Oh, no, absolutely not. There's a lot of joy though to creating something, even that it's not great. Like just the joy of doing it and making something and, just the pleasure of it that it offers itself. And so, yeah, I think that's what I would encourage people to do, not to feel this pressure to produce something, but just to enjoy the process of making something. And even if it's not great, just the fact that you sat down and made something is beautiful and good, and it's a reflection of, you know, that we're made in the image of a creator.
Abigail's our 9-year-old, she's the most artistic of us all, and so she's been making individualized coloring sheets for each kid on Sunday morning.
That's awesome.
for Sunday school, and last Sunday she actually came up with a craft. She worked with her Mimi on it and figured it out and created this, you know, it's two paper plates, and the top paper plate, you draw an egg and you color it, then you cut it in half, and then it opens up and behind it is a cross. And so, she led the kids, she prepped all the materials. Like, we didn't tell her she had to do any of this.
That's so awesome.
But she was just like, I want to do this. And we don't have Sunday school to go to, so I'm going to make my own Sunday school. And so we're like, you go for it. You know, that's awesome. Like, you do that, and we're going to support you in that. And so it's been fun seeing the kids do that. And the oldest, Boaz, is 11 now. And so he's right now he's over at his grandparents' house. And so we've basically quarantined ourselves off from everybody. I'm the only one who goes outside to like the store, but we do that specifically so we can see Leslie's parents. And so, and to protect, of course, our own health, but
sure.
But Boaz, he goes a street and a half down to go, and he's working outside with his grandfather, and he's been doing that off and on for the last couple of weeks, and it's been really cool just to see him even just getting out there, trying new things, doing new things. And this morning, he actually I got up this morning, he was making waffles.
So yeah,
and we're like, okay, all right, I guess this is a thing now. So sweet. So
that's amazing.
That is cool, and I think it's absolutely important for us to really give those opportunities and take advantage of those opportunities to be creative.
All right, well, that is going to do it for today. Be sure to come back tomorrow for part two of my conversation with Gavin Breeden. Thank you again for listening. And for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.